You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm your host, John Kuh, and I am joined today by PitcherList writer Jacob Milham. We are going to talk about his article regarding 10 Dynasty takeaways from 2025 in regards to third base. But before we get to all of that, Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, John. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, I believe this is the first time on the podcast. So just for viewers or listeners who might not be familiar with your work, maybe give a quick introduction. You know, how long have you been writing with PitcherList or just kind of just general baseball writing? What team are you a fan of?
All right. So this was actually my first full season with PitcherList. So that was pretty fun. A lot of learning. You know, this is a great community and just a great group of writers in general. Some of these guys have been around and writing about baseball longer than I've been like an active fan of baseball. So it was awesome. I've been writing about sports since 2020, but primarily started focusing on baseball in 2022. So there's still plenty to learn. I'm a fan of the Kansas City Royals, so unfortunately I did not have the best example growing up of how a competent baseball team is run. We did have that 2015 World Series championship that made it all worth it. But yeah, so I write about them and podcast about them primarily.
Awesome. Yeah, as a fellow AL Central fan, I'm a fan of the Twins. I understand the misery. Shout out to you guys. At least you had the World Series run. Those two seasons were pretty special for sure. But
that they were.
Yeah, success is fleeting, of course, as always.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Yeah, and then I believe you've been primarily doing dynasty stuff at PitcherList.
Yeah, primarily. So it's, you know, with the Royals for so long of my baseball fandom, it was, you know, folks were, they'd be invested through about the middle of May, and then you're looking to the September call-ups, like which prospects are going to make their debuts and things like that. So that was my natural foray into dynasty.
Got it. Yeah. So naturally, when the regular season is just not fun to watch, you start dreaming about what could happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any sort of fun dynasty fantasy baseball stories from this season? Any fun trades that you were able to pull off?
Truth be told, so I genuinely don't know how this one's going to work out. It was an aggressive move, but I'm glad that it works out right now. I traded for Connor Griffin mid season, and I sent out Leo DeVry and a third rounder.
Okay.
So we're going to see how that one works out. I felt better after Leo went to the Athletics. You know, unfortunately, Athletics just don't have that history of developing their position players. The pitching is looking a lot stronger, but we'll see how he develops there. And Griffin just right now feels so much closer to the show than Leo does. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully that works out for you. Griffin, outfielder with the Pirates, believe, right?
Yeah, primarily been playing at shortstop for them, but also saw some action at center field. MLB Pipeline's top prospect right now. So But like Leo is, I think they're number four, number
right,
six.
Yeah.
I want to see like it's so close.
Yes, but I guess Griffin doesn't have an all-star caliber shortstop blocking his way onto the major league roster. I guess
as
DeVries is dealing with right now.
Yeah.
That's a very fun trade. I'll look forward to seeing how that works out for you.
I'll let you know.
Well, before we get into the rest of the podcast, just a reminder to all our listeners that you can follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. We've also got an email, if that's your thing, thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Again, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Of course, we are in our off-season mode, so these episodes are just going to be a little bit shorter, a little more infrequent, but nonetheless, we are going to be talking a lot of baseball through the off-season, so definitely follow the podcast and make sure you are up to date on what's going on, not just with us, but with the rest of the PitcherList Podcast Network. All right, we are going to get into your article, kind of just 10 dynasty takeaways for the third base position. Before we get into kind of some of the specific questions about the article, just kind of what was your overall feeling about third base this season in dynasty circles?
You know, I felt like it was fairly deep in a sense, you know, and there was a good variety. Like in the article, I said versatility, but really just going back to the variety, like there's so many different types of players that brought dynasty value, if that makes sense. You know, Eugenio Suarez, it was all with the long ball. That's where he brought his dynasty value this year. But then you also had guys like rounding out the field, like Michael Garcia and Ernie Clement, who were like, they were within the top 10. Like if that was your guy all season, that was okay. It was not optimal, but it was okay. But they're very different players than those guys. And yeah, versatility was just the key thing. There was, I believe it was the top, oh boy, I think it was the top three or four, no, sorry, five. It was five of the top 10 third basemen had multiple positions of eligibility. So I thought that was something that shouldn't surprise folks, but is worth noting. Like, hey, just because a guy is primarily a third baseman does not necessarily translate to dynasty success when it comes to the season.
Sure. Yeah, I had a little bit of unfortunate experience with my third base position in my dynasty league because I was relying on a combination of Nolan Arenado and Willie Castro to fill that position.
Oh, no. Oh, it was, no.
It's, I've had a major issue at third base for the past couple years and trying to fix it. I was really hoping Brady House was going to be part of that solution, but I traded him. We'll talk about him in a little bit in the podcast. But I'm going to have to figure out third base because the Arenado trade, man, it was fun for a little bit, but it has not been very good for the past couple seasons.
No, it is not, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, we are going to start with kind of maybe the 1-2 punch in the third base rankings, which, you know, J-Ram, I think, very clearly, Jose Ramirez, clearly the number one third baseman. Without a question, I think this season or this past season was just another crazy year. 30 homers, 44 stolen bases, didn't reach the 40-40 heights of 2024. But nonetheless, I don't think you can be disappointed with what he gave you. Even if I think, you know, Cleveland's offense kind of stalled just a little bit, but I think he was able to do well in spite of that. The second important name, though, is Junior Camarino, who I think you know, a lot of people have been really focusing on. You know, he's been really hot in prospect circles, but really didn't see him, you know, in sort of any major way, you know, break out until this season, where for the Rays, I believe he got to the 40 homer mark.
Yes, he did.
So, yeah, so clearly he's, you know, basically that number two third baseman now with, you know, Devers and Riley kind of falling off the past couple seasons. Do you think Camarino has a chance of supplanting J-Ram in the next two seasons, or is Ramirez just so clearly far and away the best player right now that Camarino is just going to be second fiddle in that conversation?
I think for the most part, when you look at the power numbers, Camarino is going to be like that top guy. But when you look at overall value, it's going to be J-Ram for the foreseeable future until those stolen base numbers start falling off, because that is, you know, Camarino, he stole seven stolen bases this year. That's not bad for a player of his type, of his build, for lack of better terms. It's just not his forte, and that's okay. But J-Ram does so many things so freaking well that it's hard to knock him off that pedestal. Now, you know, Caminero's he's 22, and you know, J-Ram's on the wrong side of 30, so that passing of the torch will happen eventually. I do think like that 2-year time frame honestly is kind of fair, especially as we're looking at the Cleveland Guardians, who, you know, who is going to be getting on base ahead of J-Ram in 2026 and in 2027. It's not going to limit his RBI opportunities, things like that. So I think it's going to creep closer to that point, but there's not enough for me to say, hey, J-Ram's going to fall off a cliff in the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And one important context about Camarino's season two was that this year, you know, obviously the Tampa Bay Rays didn't play in Tampa Bay. They played at George R. Stanton Rayner Field. You know, as you mentioned in your article, that did help the home run numbers for Camarino.
It did.
So long term, right, he's still going to be playing half his games in the Trop. Do you think that hurts his value at all, or, you know, is he still pretty much going to be the same player we expect?
I think it certainly doesn't help, if that makes sense. Like, I think he is still going to be a prolific power hitter, I think. But I just, it's not going to be fair to expect 45, 110 out of him each and every year, because that, you know, that whole environment just helped so many Rays batters. It just raised all boats. A rising tide raises all boats. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly going to be a factor. Like, if someone was being silly aggressive, like if you wanted to trade him, now would be the time. Like, now his value is going to be as high as it's going to get, I believe, at 22 years old, having the season he just had. I am not suggesting trade him. I want to make that clear. I'm not suggesting it. But there are, like, hey, he had a great season. And his home field, where he played half of his games, was a factor that helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I know in redraft, you know, Camarino's kind of all over the place right now, whether he's going in the first round, second, third round. But at least for Dynasty, it feels like, yeah, he's still a very much locked down sort of top 30 guy. I don't know if that...
I would say so for top 30. It's... And you know what? He's just kind of... He is like the future of the Rays right now. Like, mm-hmm. He's the position player of the future for that team. So that role... is, you know, it's undeniable. It's going to draw you more eyes. It's also going to draw you more leeway, I guess, when it comes in the lineup. Not that he needed much after 2025, but it's still worth noting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, flipping the script from the top two guys in the tier to guys that are maybe hoping to stay in the top 10. We've got Jordan Westberg and Austin Riley. Both of those guys you kind of identified as, you know, good buy low candidates, partially because they're both coming back from some type of injury in 2025. What do you think needs to improve for both these players for them to become relevant again? And what would you see as a ceiling for both these guys potentially next season?
So right off the cuff, I am more concerned about Riley than I am about Westberg. I don't believe I'm the only one who is going to say that. You know, Riley's, ever since he signed the contract, that lengthy extension, that the numbers just haven't been there. The fantasy production just hasn't been there. It's a lot of his value has relied on things around him. You know, his age, how many guys ahead of him can get on base consistently to give him those RBI opportunities. Frankly, for Westberg, I think he just needs to get healthy. It is something to be said about, you know, rhythm, about getting into the swing of things when it comes to baseball, and just the lower body injuries affect everything. It's if you ever go through the process of learning how to swing a bat or throw a baseball, you realize how many different body parts need to be in harmony to do that the best that you can. And, you know, Westberg, I'm not saying he's like an underrated player. I'm not saying like he wasn't a guy that didn't have value. But I don't think a lot of dynasty managers were hitching their wagon to Jordan Westberg, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I think he certainly hurt some chances out there, but I don't think a lot of folks were relying on him to win their dynasty. Riley, on the other hand, some folks were. And that's just the reality of it. Frank, I don't know what really needs to change from Riley. It's, you know, there's been so many things going wrong from him. I think he's on a steep decline right now. I think he is, you know, heading more towards the Matt Chapmans of Dynasty than he is towards the J Rams of Dynasty. And we'll see what 2026 brings, a healthy 2026. And if you wanted to take a gamble on him, now would be the time to do it, I think. But I don't know. I don't feel good suggesting that, you know, John?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look at his stats the past 2 years. You know, hasn't been able to break 500 plate appearances, 19 homers in 2024, 16 homers in 2025. And I mean, it's probably followed the decline of just Atlanta in general the past two seasons as well. That team as a whole just has not been hitting very well since that World Series championship. But yeah, the star contract in his numbers from 2023 compared to the last two seasons, like this is the guy that you probably paid a premium for in 2023 if you're trying to go out and grab him after that season. And yeah, it's, you know, it's been disappointing. He's 28 years old, so he's not necessarily young, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. You know, Westbrook at least is 26, but again, his stats are similar to Riley, but he hasn't necessarily shown the heights that we've seen from Riley, right? And that's maybe the tantalizing sort of potential there, right, with Westbrook.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like I'm hoping that, you know, Westbrook is, if you can't tell, I'm a big RBI guy. I think there's a lot of context around RBI, and we should always remember that. I think Westbrook right now is set up better than Riley for those RBI opportunities. Mm-hmm. He just has to get healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it's funny that both of them are just on teams that have slowly deteriorated hitting
the past couple of years. And it is disappointing. At least, you know, you look at Baltimore and you see a decent crop of hitters right now.
Yeah.
At Atlanta, they have guys, you know, who can do it, but the question is, will they do it?
Yes.
So it's tough. Both those teams are in tough situations.
Mm-hmm, for sure. All right, going next to a couple players that, I guess similar to Westbrook, do have dual eligibility and kind of really, you know, solidified themselves as solid third baseman this year. Mikel Garcia, Jazz Chisholm. Garcia definitely had third base eligibility, I think, going into last year.
Yes.
But Jazz did not, I believe, and he was more moved to third base, I think, out of convenience for defense or something like that. Well, maybe he did play third for the Yankees in 2024 a little bit. Regardless, both these guys kind of, you know, all of a sudden they're appearing in third base rankings after maybe not being guys that you think of as third baseman for the past couple of seasons. Do you feel like both those guys are really solid dynasty assets to keep for now, or would you try to offload after a couple good years?
I would. So here's the kicker specifically about Garcia, because he was coming off of a 2024 season where he was one of the worst batters in baseball. It was awful. It was really bad. So it was, you knew he was going to be in the picture in Kansas City, but I don't think anyone predicted these heights. And I guess the scary thing about looking at his season is the expected numbers hold up for this. You know, he wasn't a guy who struck out a ton. He did have a very good expected WOBA, 353, ranked in the, what was that, 58th overall in MLB. Like, that's a pretty good spot to be at for the tier of third baseman that he is. And he's only 25 years old. He's going to be the guy who's there alongside Bobby Witt Jr. for the foreseeable future. I wouldn't suggest offloading him right now. There's just not a red flag, John. Is there anything you see with him?
Honestly, like, the fact that the strikeout rate, I think the improvements that we saw from last season, right? It's like, is that going to hold up?
Yeah.
And I don't even know if there's an issue I have with Garcia. I think it's just like, wow, he dramatically improved last season in the strikeout rate. I hope that holds, you know?
Yeah.
And if he goes back to, you know, let's just say 16% of a K rate, you know, how does that affect his numbers? I'm not sure. His hard contact rate and barrel rate did leap a little bit in this past season. If those things are consistent, then I think it's worth believing that what happened in 2025 is repeatable, right? If you can get to 15 homers, 25 steals next year, I think that's fully within range for him, and that makes him a really solid contributor, I think, in terms of fantasy baseball, both dynasty and redraft.
I agree. And now you flip to Jazz, and some of the process, I'd highly suggest go pull up Pitcher List Pro, go look at the process leaderboard, and go look up Jazz Chisholm Jr., because he had great production. You know, he had a 30-30 season. There is no denying that. It's some of the process, though, makes me wonder, okay, I don't believe that his 2025 is as replicable as Garcia's was. And, you know, there isn't anything saying like, oh, well, he was just a benefactor of being in Yankee Stadium. Like, no, he had a pretty healthy 50-50 split in home runs, RBI, and stolen bases between home and on the road. His, I mean, shoot, John, if you're looking at his numbers, just go look at that barrel rate from 2024 to 2025. I mean, going up nearly 5 points in 1 year is absolutely absurd. But then you also go look at his expected numbers. You know, he's a guy who's nearly striking out at a 28% rate. Mm-hmm. His ideal plate appearance rate was pretty low. It ranked near 300th in the mm-hmm. league.
Yeah.
That's like, this is a guy who I would be more comfortable saying, okay, at least explore trade options for him. See if this is a guy that you could use to not sell at all costs, but use to upgrade another position. But of course, Chisholm is also a guy who's going to be going into 2026 with positional versatility. And when he has that eligibility at second base in a very weak second base crop, you have to wonder, well, is even a down season from Jazz Chisholm, is that going to be a valuable second baseman? So there's a lot of nuance when it comes to the Yankee slugger.
For sure. Yeah. And I think if just looking at those process charts, like you mentioned, right, Jazz had a really high spike for probably like 3-4 months of the season, and then just dropped kind of precipitously in September. Whereas Garcia is like pretty consistent throughout the year. Doesn't necessarily get as high of a process number as Jazz does over the course of the season, but is kind of consistently probably in the 110 to 115 range for basically the entire season. That I think some just, you know, interesting comparisons between these two players. Not that you necessarily people are always making a decision between Garcia and Michael, but it's really interesting that Garcia has such high hard contact rates and the barrel rate is so low in comparison to what Jazz is doing, where Jazz has the opposite, where he doesn't have great hard contact rates. But that barrel rate jumping 5% to 14% last season, or I guess this past season, is just, kind of a stark improvement that, you know, really, really does have a lot of explanation for why the numbers look so much better this year. But it is kind of an interesting comparison between those two players.
That it is. And I think this is, if you want a little bit more oomph to like invest in Garcia and why the Royals, they've moved on from most of their hitting coaching staff. Most of the improvements that team saw, according to MLB.com, has come from external third party coaching. So we'll see what happens with the new guys that they bring in, but hopefully this is, hey, an actual internal better support system for Garcia is going to help raise him to even higher.
Yeah. What order, where does he bat in the batting order for the Royals right now?
So let's see here. Usually he was, where was he at? India was first. Bobby was second. Vinny was third. Usually fourth or fifth.
Okay.
I want to say. So he's in that good RBI opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, he's also a guy who I think is going to be a prime candidate to go to that leadoff spot if the Royals can't add something this offseason. So if your league counts in runs scored, then that's where you'd pay attention to that.
Interesting. Yeah, he was at 81 last year, which is definitely a very serviceable number. So
yeah,
if that somehow goes up this next year, he could be extremely valuable in these circles. We're going to move to some rookies, Matt Shaw and Brady House are the two that you highlight in the article. Both kind of failed to impress initially. Shaw did end up having a better finish to his season, as you mentioned in your article, ended up with a 130 WRC plus in the second half. Whereas Brady House, I traded him, so I didn't have to deal with this sort of dismay. But not a great experience for him. Only 4 homers and 29 RBI in his 73 games of the majors this past year. The slash line is pretty abysmal at a 234, 252, 322 line. We'll start with Shaw. He's on this really, really solid Cubs team that had a lot of, you know, decent offensive contributors there. And it seemed like even though, you know, the Cubs did send him down for a little bit after coming back up, like you mentioned, he kind of found his groove a little bit in the second half of the season. Do you feel like he's kind of more set for a breakout, you know, however you want to define breakout this upcoming year, at least, you know, where he could be a top 15 third baseman, let's be, you know, if we want to be realistic there.
Right. Yeah, and he was, when I was looking at his fantasy scoring, it was pretty low. I cannot remember the overall rank, so I don't even want to take a stab in the dark. But it was like in the waiver wire, like in that territory. I think that he is going to be primed for a bounce back year at the very least. I don't know what this Cubs team is going to do in the off season. I do like trust that Matt Shaw is going to be, I think it's going to rise up in the batting order a little bit. I think he's still going to hold down that third base job. And like you said, you know, they trusted him after he came back to, and they gave him that opportunity to bounce back. And I still also, I like his stolen base opportunities. Especially in comparison to other third basemen, he was slightly above average in that, even though he wasn't getting on base at a great clip. So I do trust that this was just an instance of, hey, he needed some time to acclimate. He had a rough rookie campaign. It happens more often than we would like to admit. And I think that his sophomore season is going to be a successful one rather than a slumping one.
Yeah, according to Fangraphs player rater, he was the 27th third baseman. So that sounds about right. Definitely some work to do to get into the top 15. But you know, at the same time, this was his third professional season, I believe.
He's still pretty green.
Yeah, still pretty green. And you know, I think maybe some good things to say about him as a rookie, only a 21% strikeout rate, 8.7% walk rate, you know, really good plate discipline skills for a rookie. And like you said, like those steal numbers are really impressive. He chopped, you know, added in 13 homers as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, could be, you know, a 15, 20 sort of guy if he plays a full season, something like that. So yeah. You know, not to compare him exactly to Michael Garcia, but those are kind of numbers that like you could see reflected in Michael that you might be able to get from Matt Shaw as well at a pretty steep discount, I'm sure, comparing the two players.
Yes, very, very true. Meanwhile, Brady House on the other hand. Yeah. Oh my goodness. It was, you know, this is one of those guys that, I don't know, I'm not many dynasty managers had hitched their wagon to Brady House at this point, but holy smokes, mm-hmm. like at one point he was that sort of guy.
Yes.
You dream on the hard contact, right, John? Right.
Oh, I think the trade that I got him was I traded Gleyber. Okay. I don't know how I managed to pull this off, but I think I traded Gleyber Torres and like some middling prospect for Pablo Lopez and Brady House. And I don't know how I pulled that off, but
okay.
Yeah, it was a lot of it was like, hey, I love Pablo obviously as a Twins fan, but I was like, hey, this guy, and at that time, I think House was also playing shortstop in the minors. So, you know, at the time it's like, hey, this star, you know, really solid top 10 guy in their system. But then as the years kind of went on, that he kind of dropped in the system and then eventually moved to third base. But, yeah, I mean, hey, the hard contact actually was kind of nice in the majors. Still, you know, 32% hard contact rate. The problem is it didn't really translate to barrels. Only a 4.3% barrel rate. Did strike out a lot at 28.5%. Like we already said, those pretty abysmal ratios as well. But I don't know. When you were looking at House's numbers from this past season, was there any sort of optimism that you could find in them?
Outside of what we already knew from him as a prospect, unfortunately, not really. Like, mm-hmm. there's not, when you are outside of that B tier at your position, there has to at least be something you're like excellent at, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And House just doesn't have that right now. He does hits the tar out of the ball a lot, but his swing and miss in the zone is so concerning, and I don't trust that Nationals coaching staff to address the situation wholly. Now, you know, this might be a guy who he goes out somewhere this winter and is willing to revamp his entire swing. Well, that's the case. How's that going to affect the power? Like, and it just has a ripple effect from there. So I don't foresee Brady House being a active fantasy contributor in 2026, and something very drastic would have to change for that opinion to change for me.
Yeah, we're, you know, we're on the he went to Driveline watch for
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what's maybe a little disconcerting is that he's just consistently had pretty, you know, high 20% strikeout rates throughout the minors as well. So it's not like he was, you know, basically come up like wrecked by major league pitching. He's just like, no, he's always just struck out this often, which, yeah, does not bode well necessarily for, you know, potential pro success, unfortunately for him.
Unfortunately not.
Most homers in a season, 19 in 2024. In AAA and AA combined. So certainly, yeah, there's a little bit of that prospect pedigree there. But, you know, there still hasn't necessarily been any gaudy numbers from him in the minors to suggest that he could be a really solid third baseman in the majors, at least in a fantasy perspective.
And it stinks. You know, these are like these are the sort of guys that you want your favorite team to go out and draft in the MLB draft. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't work out. He didn't grow in the areas that he needed to grow in. You take your lumps, you keep him moving.
Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on to a player that I frankly have just not heard about, but honestly, thanks to your article, we're able to learn a little bit about the guys that are maybe, I wouldn't call them sleepers, but just people who, you know, maybe, you know, like me, you know, do some dynasty fantasy baseball, but maybe aren't caught up on everyone. Caleb Bonnemer, believe?
Yep, Bonnemer.
He is a prospect with the White Sox. You kind of highlight him as a guy who has really kind of, his stock has risen a bit this season. Was a high school player, got drafted in 2024, ended 2025 in high A, so probably still a couple years away from the majors, but really stellar line in high A, 151 WRC plus in 107 games. Yeah, what do you like about Bonnemer? What makes him sort of an interesting guy for you to kind of look at?
So I need to, I don't have the numbers pulled up in front of me, so you will have to excuse me. But in this age right now, you can swing and miss, and you can chase, but as long as you're making contact in the zone, you're gonna find success on the diamond. And Bonnemer, he has a great zone contact rate. And on this White Sox team, like I'm sorry, if he continues this rate in 2026, like this is a guy that we're looking at for the opening day roster 2027. He has the tools to rise with his glove. He has a good hit tool. I think the power, he has a little bit more to grow into right there. And he has made some drastic swing changes. In my article, I linked to the actual interview, so I don't want to take any credit for that. But he sat down with Baseball America and talked about, hey, this is what I changed, and this is why. Because I do remember in the draft process, his hands were described as pretty stiff, but he was still getting great power numbers. So folks didn't really care too much, or it wasn't a major red flag. But you know, he got to the major league level and he was producing just fine with the power numbers. I mean, what he had, 34 plus 4, 12. He had 46 extra base hits in 107 games. Like, that's absolutely going to play in my mind he was kind of a tweener, shortstop in high school, moving over to third base. He's got the arm and the glove to stick there. So I trust that. But overall, number four guy in the White Sox system right now, absolutely burst onto the scene. I wasn't expecting anything from him like this in his first professional season. So this is a guy, I think if he's available, you'd take a flyer on him, or if you're looking to make a trade and have him added as a sweetener in a sense, then that's a deal you make.
Yeah, I just checked on Fantrax. He's 53% rostered, so probably still available in some dynasty leagues.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Fantrax is a combination of both dynasty and redraft, so some of those numbers are skewed. But nonetheless, he probably is available in some leagues. So.
Probably so.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, just kind of a rundown of, let's just say, the top five third baseman, just to you know, see like who we got in dynasty. So I think, you know, we've got J-Ram number one, Camarino number two. Who do you have rounding at as 3, 4, 5 right now? Just off the top of your head.
That's 3, 4, 5 right now. Gosh dang it. I genuinely, I'm drawing a blank right now because, and this is, I primarily attribute this to Devers. Like,
oh yes, 100%.
Losing eligibility because yeah. That was such a like you could slot him in right there.
Yep.
And the what is it like Machado? He's definitely not that in Dynasty. He might be that in redraft nowadays. Mm-hmm. I guess I would have to put Garcia there right now.
Okay.
For Dynasty, I mean after the season he just had, I'll put Chisholm at four. And rounding that out, man. In some leagues, it would be Devers here, but...
Yeah. Only one game played at third base last season, which is so unfortunate.
It was so unfortunate.
Yeah. I was helping Scott Chu, who writes our hitter list article, just do some prep for this for his most recent rankings. I was looking at third base eligibility, and I was like, oh, Devers is losing it. He's yeah. Gonna be a first baseman next year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I toss Alex Bregman in there. Okay. I don't know. I'm not gonna say it's a weird third base class or anything like that. But it's a little wonky heading into 2026.
For sure. Yeah. And you highlight in your article just the versatility sort of metric, right? Like Chisholm. Garcia, I think, only has third base eligibility now.
Yeah, he does. But, I was wrong about that.
Yeah, but Ernie Clement is a name you mentioned in your article as well, as, you know, guys that have multiple position eligibility. He had a, you know, decent season for himself in Toronto. A lot of interesting names as well, kind of rounding out the top 15. Caleb Durbin in Milwaukee, yeah. You know, kind of came on the scene this past season. You know, Alec Bohm just rounding out top 15, always consistent, always there. But
yep,
yeah, a lot of interesting names, and you know, not maybe as top heavy as you know we've kind of expected from the third base grouping for a while. You know, it's Jose and it's Junior, and then it's kind of a gap between until the next guy.
Yeah, and that's to be expected, unfortunately. Like if you would ask me, hey, where does Zach McKinstry rank yeah. amongst third basemen in your mind? I would have him like a fringe top 20 guy, mm-hmm. but you know he ranks eight according to Fangraphs in scoring yeah. from this past year. It is so odd. And another multi position guy that I gotta point out because context is key. Brett Beatty. I mean, he made the most of his opportunities with the Mets this year. And I just don't know what him and Vientos are going to do there at the hot corner. The Mets don't have all the time in the world to let them figure it out, though.
Yeah. You had a pretty significant blurb in the article about it.
I don't know why.
As someone who had Vientos on their team in 2023, subsequently dropped him in 2024, I wouldn't say happy, but I feel slightly validated that 2025 wasn't as good. But I did miss out on his excellent 2024 season, so I'm a little frustrated about that. But that's Dynasty Baseball, right? I think that's the challenge with trying to figure out if these prospects are worth it to keep on a team, because you just never know when the breakout is going to happen. And who knows, maybe Brady House does figure something out this offseason and turns into a serviceable third baseman in 2026.
Well, that would be nice. And I don't know if postseason any indicator. Maybe we should be talking about Addison Barger more.
Oh, sure, for sure. If he can get the playing time, man, right? Like, yep. He could be a really stellar candidate to jump up those rankings. So
that he could. That he yeah. could.
Well, obviously, we've kind of just barely covered the surface of the article. We only talked about, you know, by what, maybe six, seven, eight players. And you've got 10 different points here on Dynasty. So definitely recommend listeners check out Jacob's full article and really just all the articles that the Dynasty team is pumping out right now. I think pretty much there's a 10 Dynasty takeaways article for every single position. So definitely check that out. Even if you're not interested in Dynasty, I think it's just helpful just to know some of these names and yeah, just how, you know, how people are feeling them on a long term perspective. But yeah, before we head out, Jacob, kind of feel free to plug whatever you've got going on, you know, upcoming articles or, you know, what else you're doing in the baseball field.
Well, so I do have an article coming out on the 8th, trying to take a year ahead and saying, hey, who's going to be the top 10 prospects heading into the 2027 season. I'm sure we're going to be talking about, unfortunately, a lot of other things off the field heading into that season. But who are going to be the top prospect names at that juncture? So I'll have that coming out on the 8th. And like I said, just I have another podcast, the Royals Rundown Podcast, talk about the Kansas City Royals. So if that's your vibe, you can go check it out.
Awesome. Yeah. AL Central is a very interesting division, you know.
Yes, it is.
There was a point earlier this year where I was like, hey, everyone's above 500 except for the White Sox. And then we got to a point where I was like, oh, everyone's below 500 except for the Tigers. So nonetheless, it's an exciting division, I think.
Oh, very much so.
Is a good way to describe it.
Yes.
You know, just peak mediocrity from everyone.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. I will say Royals pitching this past season was really fun to follow. Chris Bubich was just one of the guys that saved my dynasty, my home league for a little bit until he got injured. But
yeah.
Him, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo. I mean, Cole Reagan's obviously, unfortunately, dealt with a lot of injury. But that's a really solid rotation that you guys got there for, you know, the next year or so. Noah Cameron.
It's very fun.
Yeah,
it's solid, very fun, man.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode in This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Again, you can follow us at thisweekplpod at gmail.com if you want to send us an email, or follow us on Twitter at thisweekplpod. Or sorry, just thisweekpl. And then, of course, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever stream platform you listen to. Again, one, all of them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Finally, Jake will plug this, but yeah, sign up for Pitchless Pro. Even during the offseason, we're talking about baseball on the Discord. Obviously, World Series just ended, but now we're going to be moving towards December meetings. We've got a bunch of offseason qualifying hours just went out today. So a lot of stuff, a lot of discussion still going on in Discord. And obviously, Pitchless Pro, a really good resource, I believe, that we just came out with PL projections, or at least the draft projections. So if you're doing draft prep right now, it's a great time to get involved. So yeah, definitely check out Pitchless Pro. But yeah, that is all for this week. We'll be back next week with, actually not next week, but we'll be back in a little bit with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Jacob, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.